Hi, this is Scott. I really appreciate our sponsors because they make the show possible. Today's show is sponsored by Developer Express. Become a UI superhero with DevExpress, controls, and libraries. Deliver elegant .NET solutions that address customer needs today by leveraging your existing knowledge. You can build next-generation touch-enabled solutions for tomorrow. You can download your free 30-day trial at dx.hanselminutes.com. That's dx.hanselminutes.com. Hi, this is Scott Hanselman. This is another episode of Hansel Minutes. Today I'm talking with Leslie Casita. She's a transportation technologist at the Atlanta Regional Commission, a full-stack web developer, and she's got a master's degree in city and regional planning. How are you?
Hey, Scott. Doing well. Thank you for having me on.
Very excited to talk to you. We met at the We Rise conference down in Atlanta, and within 5 minutes, we were geeking out about self-driving cars. It sounds like one of the things that you do in your work as a planner is kind of preparing for the changes that are happening in transportation, and it seems like there's no better time to be interested in the topic than 2017.
Yeah, you're right on the money. I could not have imagined being in a more exciting role back when I was in my master's program. I thought I was going to be in environmental planning, doing water work, but which was also very exciting. But the concepts behind emerging technologies in transportation are just blowing my mind, and it's hard to keep up, which is very exciting. And I get to do work that looks at how we make the best use of all these technologies into the future and how we fund them in way that we can get our hands around.
And it's more than just like transportation technology in the sense of there's newer and fancier cars coming out, isn't it? There's also big data behind it, and there's the Internet of Things. Like, these cars need to be tracked and thought about. So it's more than just the advanced vehicle technologies.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, the infrastructure that needs to support the connected and autonomous vehicles, our streetlights, and all the data sharing that will come out of just smarter roads. It's pretty exciting and exhaustive. One thing we're definitely pushing on is how do we share that data amongst jurisdictions in real time to make better decisions or get into predictive analytics as well.
What does that mean when you said smarter roads? How is the road smart?
Sure. So there's some applications that we've seen case studies of already of just sensors in parking spaces to better know when a parking deck or on-street parking is available or not, and getting that to drivers through connected vehicles quicker so that we have less roads on the car just circling. So a lot of time is wasted. I'm sure you've had the experience of just circling a parking lot, looking for that one space. That's one application that's out there. There's also neural networks that we can put on streetlights to pick up on weather patterns, air quality, and crashes as well, perhaps, and do some really cool big data predictive analytics with that.
Sometimes it's fancy stuff like neural networks, but sometimes it can be as simple as a green light on an LED that tells me that a parking spot is available. Here in Portland, where I live at the Portland International Airport, they put lights above every parking spot, and finding a parking spot is just simply driving to wherever the first green light is. And it's not super smart. It's like if it sees a car, the light turns red.
Yeah. We had a fun experience here in Atlanta a couple months ago where a major part of our network, I-85, collapsed. It's a couple of hundred feet of road that fell due to a fire. And anyway, it put a lot of pressure on our transit system, as you could imagine, because people couldn't get to work through the regular means of driving in some areas. And we had a good chance to put in some quick, not super sophisticated, very crowdsourced application of figuring out, communicating when our transit parking lot, ride and park lots had openings and when were they were full, so people could go to the next stop if possible. And that was just an online, red, green system with every parking lot name next to it that people could check in on.
It's interesting how simple ideas like that can add up to a smart city. But you had a presentation that you gave where you talk about like what does a city have to have for it to be a smart city? And there's quite a few components there.
Yeah, you're right. So last year, my team, I got to lead a policy document on transportation technology, looking at what a smart city means from that perspective and getting to some policy implications out of that. It really all circled back to better management of data, whether it's existing data or future data that we could get our hands on. But then I guess you could look further into some sustainability applications of kind of green infrastructure, solar roads, getting more into electric vehicles and bioswales to handle water runoff during big storms. We looked at a lot of components and try to apply what it all means to our policy goals. So we want equity for more people. We want better access to jobs, better access to healthcare. So we're keeping an eye on what we can do to embrace new fancy or existing technologies to help our cities grow.
One of the things that I can tell that you're passionate about from reading your papers and your policy documents is about technology-enabled mobility options, the idea that everyone deserves to be able to get up and go where they want to go.
Yes. So something really exciting that came out of the document that blew my mind was this concept of mobility as a service, which I understood before, but the finances behind it, which some companies are already thinking about, going from right now, most of us own a car and it sits vacant 94% of the time. Maybe some people have it on Turo or some car sharing application, but most of the time it's not making you income. It's just sitting there and it's a huge expense. It's like the second biggest expense after buying a home in most households. And mobility as a service really pushes the envelope to give you more mobility options without having to own a car. And I think many OEMs like GM and Ford are seeing that trend and getting into this car sharing space. But the math really works out to more people per car. So you have less pollution per car, better dollars for maintenance per car. And at the end of the day, you have a car maybe sitting 4% of the time instead of 96% of the time. So you get better utility out of that. And if you throw in car sharing like Uber Pool or Lyft Line, you get greener trips. And that is likely to come about as a kind of like a cell phone service. So you buy minutes or miles in a car, like we do with cell phone companies now. And that's how you'd get around. And you could see that really taking off in the next 5-10 years in urban settings and maybe expanding to suburban communities shortly after.
That seems like something that would be like extremely disruptive. I mean, there are just to speak about it from an American's perspective, we really like our cars, and Americans tend to buy bigger cars than they need, and one can sometimes express their wealth with their, I have a lot of cars, or I have a big car. We would need to turn that entire idea on its head.
Sure. Yeah. It's exciting and scary, depending on who you ask, right? Someone you can present that idea to, and they'll think that's fantastic. That's kind of a heaven scenario. And then someone else who really enjoys driving and has an awesome, maybe Porsche Carrera or something, thinks it's a hell scenario. Like, I don't want to drive around with autonomous vehicles everywhere. I want to, you know, get the feel of the car. So it's a balance. We'll see how the market does. I'd say in Atlanta, we are a very car dependent city. We've been built that way and people love their cars. And, some of the big companies that are relocating here, State Farm, Mercedes, NCR are all building headquarters next to transit, knowing that they want good talent, and that talent tends to be younger, I guess, software developers or the like, and they want to be car-free. So they're following the market and building that market in a very car-centric city. So that makes me excited for the possibility of it to take off in cities like New York or Portland, where the shift is already happening towards more of a sharing economy.
Yeah, the idea of like zip cars or cars that I can just walk up to and, you know, put a smart card against and drive away has really taken off here in Portland. Ultimately, it comes down to, like you said, mobility on demand. I want to go somewhere. Is it a big deal? Do I have to wait, 45 minutes for an Uber? Do I have to go and hunt around for a zip car? If the car can come to me and either I drive it or it drives itself, then that's a good system.
Yeah, there's some with any company that's a startup, you get some really cool ideas and then you have to ground truth them, right? And one of the coolest one I heard was from an AV company about focusing a lot on the human design interface so that you can request a car, it comes to you. And sometimes you don't even have, they're getting to not needing to request it, but it knowing your calendar, syncing with your Google calendar or Outlook calendar or iCal, and knowing that you'll need a car in a few minutes. So it'll send it and be ready at, you know, the corner, intersection near you. And then once you're in the car, the ads or videos or magazines will be catered to you as well, which is really creepy and fun, I think.
Yeah, I'm not sure I like the idea. Like, when I get in a cab, like, I have to go to Vegas tomorrow, and the first thing I'm going to do is get in the cab and then turn off the automatic video that decides to play and tell me all about Vegas.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think we talked about this when we met at WeRise, a little bit about convenience and ease and privacy, and you can almost see it as a graph. We all have concerns about our data getting out there and being used for someone else's gain and not our own. And I think an example with Google is that they've made things so easy that you're willing to give up some of that, those privacy concerns for the convenience that you get of their service. And I think the same thing could be applied in mobility in the future.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that you pointed out in your presentation was that in the past, a number of years until a technology was used by a quarter of Americans was quite long, almost a generation. And now it is absolutely measurable.
Yes. The pace at which technology gets developed and tested and gets to the market and gets consumed by, I think that example had 250,000 of Americans, is just crazy. It's absolutely crazy. There's a lot of flaws, you know, in that chart that I showed. But nevertheless, there are a lot of opportunities. I think that showed like the home phone being introduced in about 1936 and it taking like 35 years or something to really make it to market and be consumed by 250,000 or 250,000 of the population of Americans. And then the cell phone coming out in 1986 or so, and it only taking like 13 years to be consumed. So that's a third of a reduction in time. And I think we see it in the technologies in our cars right now that it's really come a long way since the Model T Ford.
Oh, yeah. And you can look at it. It happens over and over and over again. You look at Bluetooth in the car. My non-technical parents use Bluetooth in the car. And actually, one of the things I was talking to my dad about is that even stupidly named technologies get used. Like Blu-ray is a dumb name for a thing. And Bluetooth, like, they don't know why it's called that. I don't know why it's called right. that. But it only took a couple of years. And now we've got these, Amazon Alexa voice devices in our houses, and there's concern, of course, around is it listening all the time, but that didn't take more than maybe 5 years from the time it was conceived of.
Right, yeah, and that's another thing where convenience kind of lets you buy one. You're like, oh, cool, I'll play music just by the sound of my voice, or order more, I don't know, something like dryer sheet, whatever we all order.
More widgets.
Amazon.
So one of the things that I'm interested in that you've worked on is this idea of the self-driving car. And it seems to me like, at least in the news, like the Tesla came out and people had a feature called autopilot, which seems to me like it's kind of disingenuous. It's not autopilot. It's, mm-hmm. it's fancy stay in the lines cruise control. But by calling it autopilot, that may have set up some expectations a little earlier than appropriate for people. And I wonder if that has disrupted or caused trouble in the thinking around self-driving cars.
Yeah, I think it may have set it back a little bit, but Elon is such a snazzy guy that I think it added enough of a sex appeal, if I can say that, that it's still something people are investing in. I mean, their stock is wavering, but it's still pretty high. And I think that's definitely something we've discussed with local government partners in the Atlanta region about. September 14th, we're rolling out a big project. The city of Atlanta is with some autonomous shuttles and autonomous vehicles for the public to use along one of our major corridors. And a lot of the discussion behind that has been, well, do we do an education campaign kind of to get over that autopilot fear? Or do we just subtly release it and let people have their fears overcome by experience? And I think the city, I don't want to speak for them, but I think they're going for the latter because I've seen zero education campaigns.
So that implies that people will just figure it out and doing nothing is a perfectly reasonable strategy.
Yeah, setting up, making sure, I think on the city's end, a lot of the liability questions are out of the way. So ensuring that the technology is where we want it to be and people will be able to use it safely and get to and fro easily. It'll be a free service, so that helps. But yeah, once people try something that is convenient, I think they overlook certain things.
We talk about driver liability, but it seems to me that it's really an issue of responsibility. Like, ultimately, when is it my job to be aware of this giant 4,000-pound vehicle that I'm piloting? Mm-hmm. And when is it not? When do I give up full responsibility and I'm just on the train? Like, I know that if I take the train, like I said, I'm going to Vegas, I'm going to get on the monorail. If the monorail crashes, in no way am I in trouble. You know, right, I have no responsibility at all.
Yeah, every company that's coming out with an autonomous shuttle or autonomous car has a slightly different model. The one I like the most is the one from a local government perspective is the one that allows you to kind of lease the vehicles and the company, the provider has all the responsibility. And I think that's kind of the wave of the future. So it's on them to make sure that the software has the best recognition or redundancy built in. And that the vehicle is safe for whatever speeds it'll go on, whatever turns it'll make. And all of that is kind of exciting in the transportation world in that for regulating cars, there's so many specs, so many very detailed specs about a car has to have a steering wheel and brake pads and things that look like this and at that angle and very detailed. And with an autonomous vehicle that's, kind of level 4 or 5 where you don't need a driver at all, the steering wheel and the brakes go away. So the regulators at the federal level are definitely coming to terms with that and trying to figure that out. So at this point, I like the model of leasing the vehicle and the companies figuring it out. Because it makes more sense than the local governments figuring it out for them. And also, we're still in this holding pattern of what the federal regulations will look like for all these vehicles.
Let's dig a little bit into that. You threw out a couple of ideas I don't think people are familiar with. You talked about levels, and you said level 1 through level 4, but there's also level 0. What are these levels of autonomy?
Sure. Levels 1 through 2, I don't have the figures right in front of me, but from what I remember, it's kind of most cars that are out there are either levels 1 or 2 with maybe some detection that there's a car in the lane next to you and cruise control. Level 3, I believe, gets into more of the Tesla autopilot model. And then level 4 is where you really get into barely needing a driver. And then everyone kind of breaks it down a little bit differently. There's a level 4A, 4B, or straight to level 5 where it's the Waymo car kind of system.
Okay. So at level 0, the car is not smart. The driver has control. It's, the cars that, our parents drove, the cars from the 60s.
Yeah.
And then level 1 or 2 would be things like detecting that you're about to crash and maybe hitting the brakes for you or cruise control. But the car is telling you all about that, right? It's
correct.
Informing you.
Yeah. And then, level 3, you might have to take control back over, and level 4, you should not have to touch the steering wheel, if there is one.
Okay, so it seems like the big leap is between 3 and 4. So in level 3, the driver can grab the wheel in an emergency and like, no, not that,
Correct.
But level 4 is when there's no steering wheel, and then we all get very uncomfortable.
Hopefully not, but yes, that is likely. Especially
you're really confident in this, though. Like, this is going to be a thing. Like, I know I'm teasing you. I say that we're going to be uncomfortable without the steering wheel, but you're like, no, we really aren't. It's going to be okay.
Yeah, I really don't think so. Hopefully, the autonomous shuttles will make it out first, make it to market first, and those are going to be at a magical place in Florida. You deduce from there where I'm talking about and you can just hop in like a shuttle and take it from parking lot Z to the front door of the park. They'll also be in Tokyo for the Olympics. I think the government or a subsidiary there bought a ton of, I don't know, like 2,000 shuttles that are fully autonomous. And once it starts making it into cars that are produced by GM and Ford and the others, then you might have a little bit more skepticism. But I think by that point, you'll have a bigger database for all the cars to pull from to detect things that are odd, like deer or skunks or something that we can't really model for very easily.
Interesting. So you talk about that modeling idea, but then at the very beginning of our chat, you mentioned the idea of smart cities, smart parking spots, smart roads. I guess I imagined a self-driving car to be like an AI in a vehicle with wheels that was just super smart. But now you mentioned skunks or raccoons, and it makes me think about there's so much stuff that could potentially happen that I don't know how anyone, even a human, could be prepared to get into this vehicle, much less an AI. Are these initial shuttles going to know more about the roads because they are, you know, kind of constrained to stay within a certain, you know, several city blocks, or constrained to stay within an area? Do they have additional sensors that we can't see?
Yeah, I think you're right on the right path. The autonomous shuttles that I speak of that I get really excited about will be on a kind of a fixed route. It'll be a little bit harder to divert because you have to plan the route, set it up in about 2 hours, which is still pretty quick. But they'll kind of know what to expect because they'll be on a college campus or one road or something like that, one loop. Once you get it into cars, that are more on demand, like the vision of mobility on demand, then you do need to tap into some larger database for the unexpecteds, right? And what's really exciting there is augmented reality is helping get to that, get cars or the technology to figure out stuff faster than we could by deploying and piloting cars in the real world. So in a virtual world, they're actually testing what does a car do when it sees this or that at a much greater speed for lower cost than getting cars out in Nevada or Arizona where they're testing a lot now.
Okay, so the more you control the area, the more you control the streets and the environment, the more the car is going to be more effective. And if I theoretically said, now drive me out into the boonies, the car might be able to go only so far. But then in the future, the cars might know enough to go anywhere
Yes.
in the country.
Yeah, that's what I'm hearing now. And the ability to learn on the fly will increase and share that learned information with other connected vehicles or autonomous vehicles will be greater, which is pretty awesome from a database building perspective.
When I learned to drive a car, and I'm curious, when you learned to drive a car, my dad insisted that I learn to drive a stick shift, a manual shift car, because he believed that understanding how the car worked provided some value, and he wouldn't let me drive an automatic until I was competent on a manual. But there are people saying that people who are born today won't ever drive a car.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's one of my favorite quotes. You can argue with it all you want, but I love that quote from Henrik Christensen, who used to be at Georgia Tech, and we lost him to UC San Diego, but he's still in our network. They might not ever drive a car. They might have mobility as a service everywhere they go, mobility on demand, which could be a really exciting opportunity. I think that opens up a great opportunity for folks who might be mobility impaired. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of thought in that field going on about every, you know, autonomous vehicle or shuttle that operates under a city would have the ability to deploy a ramp or be a voice mm-hmm. command operated. The OLLI by Local Motors is partnering with IBM to bring Watson into the vehicles so that they can, people can troubleshoot or set up the directions without having to be able to see or control a system.
That's such an important thing to point out, because when we think about like people who aren't mobile, the simplistic way of thinking about it is, oh well, there's us and then there's people in a wheelchair. But my mother-in-law lived with us for almost 4 years. She came from Zimbabwe. She was an older lady. She didn't know how to drive. Mobility suddenly, which we never thought about, became a big issue for her. She's perfectly capable of walking, but the nearest bus stop was 3 miles away. So she had to take, there was ride shares for seniors. There were small buses that would take her around. We learned all about the mobility options around us, and it gave us a little bit more empathy, realizing that it's not about ability or disability. It's about choice. It can be about age. It can be about familiarity. There's so many things that could change how someone moves around. And if we have self-driving cars, at some point, she would just have a shuttle come to the door.
Yeah, it's really exciting from access perspective. I'll tell you, we work a lot in human services transportation, which covers mm-hmm. that world that you got intimately acquainted with. Mm-hmm. And there's so much room for disruption in that field, which I think autonomous vehicles will make it possible for. And software developers, anyone listening who needs a startup idea, look into HST. There's such a low bar to improve upon. It's really exciting from the access and equity perspective. I'll tell you candidly that it is a nightmare from a modeling perspective. We do a lot of transportation modeling at my office to see what our congestion will look like into 2040 right now, and we'll go further next year. But that adds so many more trips, and how do you plan for better signal phasing or whatever can improve congestion issues when you're adding hundreds of thousands more trips, hopefully, because it would be great for more people to get around independently that can't right now. But with every good, there's something to work through. So it's a good challenge to have.
Yeah. And it can be made to benefit everyone. Like if I had a car that was super mm-hmm. smart, I could put it into the pool and then it could be sent off. Like if I don't need my car until lunchtime, I could have my car driving people around town on its own, and then maybe it could come back. Just like solar can push power back onto the grid, there could be a grid of vehicles.
Yeah, exactly. It's pretty exciting from a cost-sharing perspective, bringing your price of ownership down and making the price of getting around cheaper for someone else who might be on the lower income spectrum. You kind of touched on it there, too, about electricity or solar. I'd like to see more in this field of solar roads. We're testing some solar roads here in Georgia, and mm-hmm. I'm pretty excited about the outset of that and some inductive charging while driving would be awesome to have deployed in U.S. cities so that we can get a better handle on our air quality.
It's so interesting. It's not the future we thought we would get when we watch movies like iRobot, but it actually right. sounds like it could turn out to be pretty amazing.
I hope so.
One of the last questions I wanted to ask was about the trolley problem and the ideas of how does an AI make a decision from an ethical perspective. The ethics of this is really interesting, and we don't have a lot of time left, but can you explain the trolley problem and why that can be an issue for self-driving cars?
Yeah, the trolley problem, I think you got to it pretty quickly, is that if an autonomous vehicle is about to crash, which decision does it make? It could take out a kid, it could take out an adult, it could take out the people in the vehicle. What's the lesser of all evils, I guess, and how quickly does it make that decision? That is a very valid question that many people are working harder than I could imagine on. That's something that the insurance companies definitely want an answer to sooner rather than later. And I'm always impressed when I check in with insurance companies to see where they're at. But I like to take a step back when that question is asked a little bit about the mm-hmm. number of accidents on the road or crashes, sorry, on the road every day that are fatal. There's, forget the exact figure, but like 30,000 crashes on the road every day that are close to fatal.
Wow.
And the propensity of, the possibility of autonomous vehicles, they could reduce crashes by up to 90%. I think the feds released 86% after some testing. Reducing 30,000 daily crashes by 86% or 90% is just unfathomable. So having those situations come up 86% less of the time is something that I think everyone should applaud. 100% of the time would be better, but reduction in potential crashes by 86% of the time is something we can't do as humans.
I think that's really, really important to remember that we might freak out. Let's say that a self-driving car makes a mistake and one person dies.
40,000 people died, you know, in 2016 on the road. That's insane. And like you said, millions and millions are injured. And we only have 300 million. Like, we all know someone who's been in an accident, right? There's only 350 million people in the country. Every one of us knows someone who's been in a car accident and been somewhat injured. If we can reduce that, that would be amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. It's almost unfathomable, the potential for safety that could be improved there.
Yeah,
and not only also when a crash does happen, the information about that crash can get reported a lot quicker to the local jurisdictions, and then whatever caused that crash can get mitigated quicker so that it won't happen again.
Good point. I do. The one thing I am worried about is I don't want people on their self-driving cars texting. I still would rather that this is just me being old. I'd rather that they just pay attention, even if they can't do anything. I'm so frustrated right now when I see people on their cell phones at stoplights. I don't know when that became normalized behavior.
Oh, yeah. I'm 100% with you. And I don't drive that often. And I find it hard to put the phone down when I hear a ding. So I just turn my phone off sometimes because it's not even fear of missing out. It's just a little addiction.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That problem. I'm looking forward to iOS 11 on the iPhone is going to be able to detect when you are driving, and it'll put the phone in totally quiet mode while you're driving, which is
nice.
Not self-driving cars, but it'll definitely make my life better.
Yeah. Our car right now won't allow us to text back when we're driving or when it detects that the car is moving. But
nice.
There's more improvements to come there.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much, Leslie Casita, for talking to me today about technology and transportation and what's coming in the future.
Yeah, thank you, Scott.
This has been another episode of Hansel Minutes, and we'll see you again next week.